Family's all
Thank
that
you
matters.
For tuning in to The Queer Truth, this a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise. Hi, Denise.
Hey. Hello. Hello. It's a beautiful day, even though it's raining.
It is a beautiful day here. Sun is shining. And we have so much to get into, so I'm just going to get straight to it. Let's start with the good stuff. Chance the Rapper.
Ooh,
Chance the Rapper showed everybody how it's done this week by donating $1 million to Chicago schools. So 10 schools will receive $1 million. And he did this because he did originally try to do it a different way, right? He met with Governor Bruce Rauner of Illinois, and he felt like he only received vague statements because that's what politicians do. And after observing the governor's behavior in basically vetoing and being obstructive and trying to find a resolution with schools, he decided to take matters into his own hands and said, guess what? I'm going to donate $1 million from the proceeds of my upcoming tour to help the city's education system and hope that other people will follow suit. He said to see it as a call to action. Quote, I'm honored to make this donation to Chicago Public Schools Foundation and help cultivate Chicago creative minds. I'm committed to helping Chicago's children have quality learning experiences that include the arts. End quote. And of course, now the governor is like, oh, hold up.
Let's meet again.
So they're going to meet today, Friday, to discuss funding the Chicago public school system. There were some people, there was a person from the, I don't know if it was necessarily someone who was speaking on the governor's behalf, but she is a spokeswoman for the governor. Eleni Demirtas said in a statement that philanthropy would not solve the school's funding crisis and felt the need to mention that the Rauners themselves, meaning the governor and his wife, are passionate donors to our schools.
Mm.
But individual contributions will never be enough to address the financial challenges. Of course they won't. But why are you being shady?
Yeah, especially since the issue is so urgent. Schools in Chicago aren't just dilapidated or failing in that way. They're actually being closed. And the reason that is given is lack of funding.
Exactly.
So this was an emergency measure. It was not just kind of like a feel good, let me help you out and get you some flutes. It was an actual emergency measure to take away the justification for closing these schools.
Absolutely. And, you know, Chance the Rapper, of course, everybody went crazy about this. He received a lot of positive messages from people like the former First Lady Michelle Obama, who is from the South Side herself.
Lovely.
She tweeted, thanks at Chance the Rapper for giving back to the Chicago community, which gave us so much. You are an example of the power of arts education. He's an example, but so is Common. So is Kanye.
Mm-hmm.
So is Jennifer Hudson. So
I'm wondering where Chicago produced a lot.
Chicago produced a lot well before today. I would like to add that there was a migration from the South to Chicago, and all of them folks that we know from Mavis to Sam, all of them folks that gave us the beautiful music that we still listen to today, but the music of the 50s and 60s, it was all from Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Well, Chance is coming from a very interesting legacy. His father's a politician. He grew up extremely civically engaged. He's educated in ways that most people are not educated about how certain things are interconnected. So he's in a unique position to be like, and this is how I'm going to do it. This is why Chance probably hasn't signed a contract. Right. Because that's not the point for him. The point is to be able to do his art and do it well. And he's an innovator in a lot of ways. So I hope a lot of people follow suits, not only with what he's doing in terms of his civic engagement, but with how he handles his business with his art as well. And won a Grammy.
Won a Grammy.
My imaginary baby daddy.
Really?
Yes.
Young. I don't know. Would you go to jail for that?
Wait a second. Jail? How old is he?
No, he's old enough. He's old enough.
Okay. Because I thought he had real world babies and stuff. Like, oh, gosh, don't do that to me.
No.
You got me thinking he's 15. No.
He's not 15. Chancellor Jonathan Bennett is not 15. But he's young. Just keep your hands off. So moving on to not so great news.
Okay.
That made the internet a buzz. A certain used to have a great legacy, now no longer has a good legacy, and continues to ruin it at every chance.
Ooh, I love these riddles.
Ben Carson.
Ooh.
Dr. Ben Carson, I should say, because that's the legacy we want to remember him for.
Why do we? No. Why are we selected? Like, it could be like a complicated, it could be a potpourri, like a Bill Cosby drink. It could be just like full of flavor and roofie. And maybe I'll put you on the Cosby Show.
It's rough.
And rape. Right? Like, it's a complicated potpourri.
He hasn't raped anyone, guys. He hasn't raped anyone. That's not what we're trying to
do. I'm just saying, like, people's legacies are complex things. I think that we should stop putting it in the good box or the bad box.
No, I'm not saying good or bad. I'm just saying he has ruined, because his legacy was built on an assumption of intelligence, and now that has been called into question because of everything that he has stated. And I will do a brief rundown, starting with this week, making his debut as the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development on Monday. He was sitting in a room full of agency employees and talking about the American dream. And he went on to say, quote, "That's what America is about, a land of dreams and opportunity. There were other immigrants who came here in the bottom of slave ships, worked even longer, even harder, for less. But they too had a dream that one day their sons, daughters, grandsons, granddaughters, great-grandsons, great-granddaughters might pursue prosperity and happiness in this land." End quote. Now, a lot of people sitting in the room claim that there was no audible reaction to be heard by the audience. And most people understood what his sentiment was. Most people are excited to have their new boss, which is saying something because not everybody has said that from the different new secretaries. The problem is Twitter and the rest of the media did see a problem with his calling enslaved Africans who were forcibly brought to Turtle Island immigrants. So I would like to add that this person is the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, and this person said he lived on Section 8, his mother received food stamps, and he has never received government help. That is a quote. This person also said in 2013, "The worst thing that has happened in this nation since slavery, is Obamacare." Quote, And it is in a way. It is slavery in a way, because it is making all of us subservient to the government. And it was never about health care. It was about control, end quote. So, you know, he has some quotes behind him on this, right? He did try to, okay, well, first of all, there were obviously a lot of reactions, like Samuel L. Jackson on Twitter. He, you know, was doing the all caps and the cussing. He would happen.
No filter.
Because it's Sam. Like, why? Why would there be? He was just like, okay. Double exclamation points. Ben Carson, I can't. Immigrants in the bottom of slave ships? Mother, please.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Sam is always keeping it real for all of us, which I appreciate. Ben Carson did try to correct or explain what he meant by it. He had a Facebook post where he said the histories of immigrants who came by choice and those who came by servitude should never be intertwined, but hey, what's the big deal? And so other white people then tried to search for a reason that makes it okay for what he said. And they pointed out that in academia, there has been some questioning around if enslaved Africans should be included in the immigration narrative. Should they be called immigrants? But of course, recognizing that their immigration story is a severely different one. And then, of course, Breitbart, I think, was probably one of the first, but others followed suit, Washington Post and New York Times, quoting President Obama at a naturalization ceremony in July in 2012, where he stated, quote, "We say it so often, we sometimes forget what it means. We are a nation of immigrants. Unless you are one of the first Americans, a Native American, we are all descended from folks who came from someplace else. whether they arrived on the Mayflower or on a slave ship, whether they came through Ellis Island or crossed the Rio Grande, end quote. The thing about this is what people, well, you know, Trevor Noah, he had no issues with calling him out. Trevor Noah said, slaves weren't immigrants because an immigrant has choice. They choose the country they're going to because they hope it will bring them a better life. Saying that slaves are just another group of immigrants erases how Black people are uniquely oppressed in America. It helps to justify blaming African Americans for their hardships. You can't do that. Break it down for us.
This, why are you asking me to break it down? I ain't Trevor Noah. Listen, Trevor Noah's an immigrant, right? He came here from South Africa to launch his comedy career and be on The Daily Show. Harriet Tubman, not so much, right? We all know this, but, you know, it just has to restate it. But this is part of the grander plan that is going on with Ben Carson. People have speculated on his sanity or his intelligence. And I don't want to do that just yet, because I think that these kinds of betrayals happen too often with prominent Black men in particular, right? If I can remember my own recent history, that there's something in it for them. Like, what is in it for Clarence Thomas? Because he's been on it. He's been consistently just who he is, right? Since he joined the Supreme Court and even before. So something has got to be in it for Ben Carson. And one has to then speculate about, well, what is in it for him? Because it's not like he was broke, as far as we knew, right? Like, it didn't seem like he was broke. I don't think it's some sort of like get out type revenge of the body snatchers that got taken over his mind and everything like that. I think more it's this kind of lure of being close to power and white approval. Because right after that came out, the Washington Post reported on $6 billion being cut from HUD. That is what is planned by the White House, which would mean that the entire development block grant would be completely suspended. And, you know, we have a real estate developer in the White House. So that means that how money is used to revitalize, poor communities is of great importance to them. Because when you take the money out of those communities and you let those communities just fail spectacularly, then you can go and take them for a song. You can go in and buy whole blocks for what you couldn't even pay rent for in certain cities. So that's what's happening right now, is that, you know, the rug is being pulled out of his entire department. He and Betty DeVos have been placed as heads of department that the conservative radical element that has power in the White House don't want to exist. They don't want HUD to exist. They don't want the EPA to exist, right? So they had to get people in there.
DeVos that is over education. But yes, they are trying to get rid of the education department.
Right. I mean,
you said EPA.
Trying to get, I say EPA?
Yeah.
Oops, sorry.
They
don't.
They are trying to get rid of EPA as well.
That's true, too. Yes. That's true, too. They don't want the EPA to exist. They don't want the Department of Education to exist. They don't want the Department of Justice to exist, to be for real, for real. But
okay.
Oh, that's why you put a Southern sheriff in charge. Okay. So that's what's happening right now, mm-hmm. is that they're putting destabilizing elements. It's just so sad that he would let himself be used as an agent in that fashion. But I don't really think that he wakes up in the morning and says, ooh, I'm going to let myself be used as an agent. I really think there's something in it for him that we're not seeing. It's going to come out.
Does he know that there's something in it for him?
It's going to be in a lifetime movie. It's going to be in a lifetime movie.
He already had his movie. Cuba Gooding Jr. played him. He doesn't get another movie.
Sequel. He's definitely, with all of this, he's got to have a sequel lifetime movie. And guess who's going to play him? Samuel L. Jackson.
Girl. Don't have Samuel cussing us out on Twitter.
Samuel is going to recreate his like House Negro from Django as Ben Carson.
No.
For the lifetime movie of Ben Carson's later life.
Samuel, that was Denise. That was not Cece.
Just so you know.
Let's
I'm
be
your number
really
one
clear.
Fan.
Let's
number
be
one
really
fan.
Clear.
Won't be no British actors playing him, that's for sure.
Woo! Okay. Woo! And before we end this segment, I just feel like we have to briefly touch on what trended number one on Twitter Wednesday. Hashtag ATL orgy.
Oh, we're going to talk about that orgy?
Let's do it. So Sydney G, a phone sex operator who is on her Instagram hustle and other hustles, decided that she was going to celebrate her 27th birthday at a swingers club called Trapeze. Trapeze has membership fees. It has jacuzzi, showers, all the things. It's a, you know, standard swingers club in Atlanta.
Okay.
And because it sold out, according to her, twice, she has gotten hip to the fact that she needed a larger place and it's going to be a secret location rather than letting everybody know the address before the party.
Mm-hmm.
Ticket were for single ladies, $99.99. For couples and for single men, $175. The party will happen on March 19th. And I'm not even sure why it decided to trend on Wednesday, but it did. Sydney G's birthday party, ATL orgy. So I went down the Tumblr and Instagram rabbit hole, which was a mistake. Her Facebook page is currently frozen for 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they even held like a live Periscope where they were talking about things and basically said that STDs are spread through sexual repression.
Of course. We know that. CBS has said so. Okay.
And HIV was invented in the Bible.
Okay. Wow. That's a new one. Tell me about it.
Yeah. And Deuteronomy. Sydney and her sister both said that they are not into women.
Okay.
But Sydney then revised that and said she about 10% into women.
Which is the amount of percent that you need to titillate men with your interest in women. So that's good. That's good.
Right?
So she's all set.
The photo shoot was very phallus heavy. When talking about protection, they said they would be offering condoms. That's it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be a lot of booze. And a lot
of candy to get some saran wrap. That's not okay.
Gonna be a lot of booze, a lot of food. You can have sex anywhere, you can sleep anywhere. They don't give a fuck. Basically, it's what she's written on her website. She's also tried to do this. I'm not liable for anything. If you leave the club, if you leave the location, the spot drunk, that's not her problem. The law says it's your problem. Why don't you just confiscate keys at the beginning of the night? If you're listening, Sydney, that's a tip. Confiscate the keys. Also have someone read something about consent, because the only thing I could find about consent on the invitation was you don't have to do anything you don't want to do. You can do everything you want to do. See, those are mixed.
Those are mixed things, because sometimes things you want to do have to do with things that other people don't want to do.
So might want to clarify for those who are a little over ambitious at the party. Then this outlet, rollingout.com, grabbed hold of this. And I have to presume, and this is going to be ugly, but I'm going to say it anyway. I have to presume the black man who wrote the first article on it is straight, because he came from this whole let me quote so no one thinks that I'm trying to be mean here. In a city like Atlanta, where the rate of new HIV infections is being likened to a third world country, the hashtag ATL orgy has set Black Twitter on fire, end quote. I'll stop there. This man who graduated from Morehouse, talking about Black millennials and HIV because they're going to an orgy. And then he even said Truvada and the PrEP as if those were two separate things. So this is where I go, you must be straight, because you're not informed about what PrEP is, because Truvada and PrEP, not two separate things. Okay. So, but why is the orgy or the attendance of orgy being equated to
HIV? Well, some orgies could, you know, if you're not promoting safer sex practices,
she said condoms.
Yeah, that's not essentially enough.
She's not liable for STDs, which she's not. She's not. She's not liable for the transmission of STIs. But she does, you know, promote to a certain extent. We don't know what's going to happen at the party, but if they have it laid out in the bowls at every bed, that, you know, what more does she need to do?
Okay, so for one thing, there's a few points here, but the first I would like to make is that consent is intrinsically linked to STD transmission. Because if you do not consent to what is about to happen to your body, you're not consenting to the conditions upon which it is about to happen to your body, mm-hmm. right? So that means whether or not your partner is using some sort of protection, whether or not you're able to disclose your health conditions, that's not happening because you're not even consenting to the actual sexual act. So that's the first thing. Mm-hmm. And she does not have a culture of consent.
Not at all.
At her space. This is really sad because this is something that I think when I came into queer culture, let's say in the early 90s, it was so helpful because there was a lot of panic still around HIV and safer sex practices. And even though that was something that had blown up in the male community more so than within the queer women's community, it still was something that we were heavily involved in. That being the case, I had to become extremely educated about those things. I still am learning, of course, mm-hmm. right? We're all learning. Mm-hmm. Stuff comes out all the time. But at the same time, it's not like I would ever assume that you're going to put, heterosexual people in a space, heterosexual men, right? And not have any discussion with them about that in this space, this is what is accepted around how you get with women, right? Even when she says couples, I mean, this is so clearly a heterosexist and heterosexual space. She says couples. Two men are not a couple, I don't think, right? Because a single man pays $175. Uh-huh. So two men are not going to be able to come in and say, well, we're a couple, we'll pay $175. No, when she says couple, that includes...
Well, she's coming from a swingers background, right? And the swingers background is, by statistics, white heterosexuals who are middle class.
And in all of her promo stuff, she does include Black people,
well,
right?
She's in Atlanta, right? So, mm-hmm. and that should be said, this is Atlanta and she's turning 27. So she's a baby to the game. There are so many orgies happening in Atlanta on a regular basis. There are a wealth of parties, secret groups, and people in general that she could have reached out to get a little, hey, what's the best way to go about this? But she's turning 27, and it seems like she's one of those types, from what I've seen on her Instagram, and this is me being very judgmental. She seems like she's one of those types who can't be told nothing. She also was interviewed by RollingOut.com. There is a podcast where they say she sets the record straight, but I didn't really hear any straightening of records.
Does she state the passage where HIV was invented in the Bible? Because I feel like it's Deuteronomy. It might be Corinthians. I'm not sure. One or two. I'm not sure.
Maybe it's Leviticus.
So, possibly. All of that might be true, but it's so clear. It's so clear that from the onset, it's probably going to be safer spaces, especially around sexuality, because we receive so many negative messages and toxic messages around sexuality and around masculinity and about how to perform those things. Safer spaces have to be very intentional. They don't happen accidentally.
Right.
You don't just like say, let's show up and have sex. And then, everyone is like sitting around talking about, well, do you really want me to touch you? No, that doesn't happen. Right. Like, it doesn't happen. Otherwise, frat parties would be like a bastion of sexual exploration and awakenings, right?
And we all know that's not the case.
Instead of the nexus of trauma that they are for so many.
Right.
Okay. So that's basically what's about to happen with the ACL orgy, just based on the promotional materials, because people are going there expecting like, hey,
right.
Do what I want.
Yes.
Sleep anywhere. Fuck who I want.
Right.
And not thinking about any kind of accountability around that.
Exactly.
Could use a condom, could not, could do the
Could right? ask this chick, but hey, her booty's out. Let me just
Right. She kinda drunk. She's sleeping on the floor. Maybe.
Maybe go for it. Right.
She looks sexy when she's sleeping.
Right.
Right. So all of that is about to go down.
Uh-huh.
And I think the reason why it trended and why people were excited about it is somewhat similar to what I initially wrote you when you sent it to me. You sent it to me and I just saw this. And of course, you've sent me stuff about spaces that are sex positive, mm-hmm. that are poly friendly, and are very intentional spaces. So, of course, in my head, I'm thinking about, oh, okay, it's one of those. So I already had some sort of like situational bias, like, oh, you know, so it's going to be a sex positive space. And when I saw the images, I think people were very excited about seeing like Black people sexualized in a beautiful way.
Right. I will say the photo shoot was nice.
Right. The photo shoot is nice. And I assumed without reading anything that it was going to be a sex positive space. Mm-hmm. It's not.
No, it's not.
And I don't like having youth bias around it either. That, okay, she's young and she's a baby, and therefore, look, the babies become, they be hit them with knowledge.
No, I'm not.
Sometimes this particular one, though, you know, I mean,
it was not generalized. It was in particular. I said, from what I can see on her Instagram.
Right.
And what I have peeped on her Tumblr.
Someone with a Tumblr page that doesn't know how STDs are transmitted, like, is that allowed on Tumblr?
And it's posting porn.
Is that allowed? Like, someone with a Tumblr page, like an active Tumblr page that doesn't understand consent, is that
very
allowed?
Very active Tumblr page with a lot of porn.
Tumblr, get your girl. Tumblr. Get your girl. I expect more out of, I expect this kind of stuff out of Reddit. But Tumblr, I'm disappointed. Mm.
Well, just to give an update on a few things that we've talked about, Nicki Minaj has said that she has no plans in the near future addressing Remy Ma.
But she lied.
Okay.
Because she came out and the internet is a buzz because she came out with no frauds today talking about and a video that is a lyric video of one verse because she has to explain her puns, right? Like she can't just have the pun. She had to do a tutorial for some of her puns in this verse. And she got a feature on the clapback that took her 2 weeks to produce and put out. And you can buy the clapback on iTunes. Nicki is changing the game. It's weak. I don't know what Nicki's doing right now.
Exactly. I said, Nicki Minaj has no plans to address Remy Ma.
She phoned in Lil Wayne. She got Drake. I don't even understand how this works.
Then there is Safari, who went on Wendy Williams to say, Nicki, do the right thing. You know you owe me money. Do the right thing.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Yes. Then there was...
No.
We don't have a lot of time. We're moving on.
Okay. Let's do it. No, anytime Wendy Williams come up, I got so many things in my head. It's just going. I don't know. Okay,
and
go.
And then we have Karrueche Tran, who has decided that she's going to seek a permanent restraining order.
Do it, Karrueche.
Then we have...
against Chris Brown.
Then we have Azalea, who, instead of showing up in court for an incident where she allegedly bit a woman's titty.
Not in a consensual way.
Not consensually, aggressively. Instead of doing that, she showed up at Paris Fashion Week with her booty out.
Booty, booty, booty.
So now she will probably wind up in jail. Okay, that's the roundup. In our second segment, as most of you will have heard by now, Wednesday was International Women's Day, celebrated in a variety of ways all over the world. And a lot of women had a lot of thoughts. A lot of women had a lot of thoughts about the day. So there were two separate events in New York City there and around the world. But specifically in New York City, there was a Day Without a Woman, which was a labor rights and women's rights strike brought to people in the U.S., at least by the organizers of the Women's March on Washington. And a Day Without a Woman, that was a hashtag that trended that day. And the idea was that women stay away from work, wear red, and all the things. And there was, of course, the International Women's Strike, which is the global way of doing a day without a woman. And a lot of people had a lot of thoughts. So initially, it was said, you know, that this International Women's Day should honor the legacy, the history of where Women's Day comes from, which if you don't know, you can read about it. It has a very red, if you will, history. It does go back to labor strikes at the beginning of the 20th century. And the people who organized it said the goal was to, quote, highlight the economic power and significance that women have in the U.S. and global economies, while calling attention to the economic injustices women and gender nonconforming people continue to face, end quote. A lot of people had awareness around the fact that, you know, you have to be financially, economically positioned to be able to stay away from work. Not everyone is allowed to stay away from work, like it's just an inconvenience. A lot of people I read, white women who have good jobs on either side of the aisle, saying that they don't understand what the point is of saying, like, who is so lazy as to stay away from the job? Yes, I saw this happening on Facebook throughout the day from a variety of women who were basically like, women should be thankful that they are working today, and staying away from the job isn't going to do anything but show how easily replaceable they are. So that was one sentiment from people who were not aligned with the message. There were other sentiments saying, for example, I read one woman say, I'm not actually about this because I'm tired of these well-intentioned but ultimately meaningless types of actions. And then they gave some examples, for example, hashtag we are all immigrants moment. No, because we aren't all immigrants. Then there was the hashtag I am a Muslim too. Again, misguided. And then there was the hashtag a day without immigrants. Obviously, again, as white people do, well-meaning, but more an exercise in patting yourself on the back rather than actually tapping into the needs of the people who are immigrants, who are Muslim, who are women and so forth.
Oh.
What's your take on International Women's Day and how it was celebrated specifically this year?
Yeah, I don't think there's any one way that it was celebrated. What we're dealing with here in Vienna and the action that happened around International Women's Day was really trying to combat Islamophobia. There's been a misconception here that that Muslim women cannot be feminists, that they can't be liberated, that they have to be oppressed, especially if they're wearing some sort of head covering. There's been an effort to combat that here that hasn't always been smooth. And some clashes happened during the Women's March. We had a parallel march here in Vienna. And now there's some efforts to remedy that with what the program was for International Women's Day. I've never really felt particularly connected to it, to the International Women's Day. Not because I don't think that we need to acknowledge women, and as a woman, I feel like I need to be acknowledged on a regular basis. But because, I don't know, it's kind of like Black History Month in a lot of ways, that I feel like the old kind of like ceremony and rituals get kind of like lauded about, the old platitudes, the old representational icons get spoken about. And I'm not sure if it makes an effect on the disinformation that people have around people that are women, or that they have around people that are Black people, right? Like, I don't really know if it makes much of an impact, for real. I'm really the wrong person to ask about this. I'm a bad feminist in this sense.
Really? Does that make you a bad feminist?
So many things make me a bad feminist. Like, that's like one in a many, it's a long list, right? You know?
Well, the left in Berlin, they did it slightly differently. They did an International Women's Struggle demonstration for about an hour and a half on the day. So I guess my issue with people talking about all the things wrong with these demonstrations is I haven't heard anyone really offer what could be done that would be more uniting.
Yeah, it's a hard one. I really don't know. The thing that I think that has come up very, very often is that within the women's community, within the feminist community, there are a lot of people that are still reluctant to face homophobia, to face their racism. And since that's not really clear that it has to be intersectional, it becomes problematic, and a lot of people feel very disconnected from the feminist movement. One thing that one of the Berlin organizers was saying was that trans people were saying that they were afraid they would be attacked at the women's marches for their gender identities. in Berlin.
That was a stretch.
Yeah. Well, you know, if someone is saying this is how I feel, stretch or not, that's how they feel, right?
When I say that's interesting, it's because I know the people organizing. I know the people involved. I know plenty of trans women involved. So I'm surprised.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, I'm hoping that International Women's Day grows, but I'm also hoping that their goals are more clearly articulated and unified, which is very hard to do because the struggle in Berlin may not be the same as the struggle in New York, right? Like they're Absolutely. Not necessarily the same.
No,
so having unified goals is something hard. One thing that I think all women struggle from is the pay difference. Women in Iceland, I think, did something really interesting where they were leaving their day 14% earlier because they get 14% less
mm-hmm.
On average. So I thought that was really interesting, and I thought that was a very clever way to protest that. International Women's Day, yeah. I hope that somehow I find a way to connect to it as a woman myself. I've been a woman for many years now, so. I hope that I can connect to it.
Don't let me put out your age. But then when we talk about Black women specifically, where do things stand for us? Because, for example, this argument that it's a classist thing, the strike.
Mm.
It wasn't mm-hmm. a classist thing. The origins of the Women's Day strike is not classist.
Right, but there's so few protections for yes, working class women
may
right
I
now.
Finish? And so when women who can take the opportunity to go off work, do that. And they say that they are still honoring the women who they know specifically cannot do that. They're criticized because they can't speak for those women. Well, then what should they do?
I really don't know.
But this is what I'm saying in activist communities. There's never any type of agreement around really basic things.
Mm-hmm. I think what you're getting at is like the essential struggle of the left, right?
Mm.
The essential struggle of the left is that there's so much diversity of thought.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a blessing and it's a curse. That diversity of thought and that the fact that people have such radically different solutions, all within, of course, the same goal, but they have these different solutions for some well thought out reasons that they're very committed to, mm-hmm. right? So that means it's really hard to find unified solutions to problems on the left. Whereas on the right, in conservative ideology, that struggle is not as severe. Not to say there's no diversity of thought, but there's less.
There's right? less. And
there's also more of an inclination to hierarchy. So
yes.
if someone on top says, this is what we're doing today, then there's a fall in line mentality of this is what we're doing today. Okay, that's not so much so on left. It exists
right,
in certain circles, but not so much so in a uniform way on left.
Because the left is very much about, you know, flat hierarchies or anti-hierarchy. However, I mean, the best example coming out of last week was the mayoral race in St. Louis. I have to bring it up because
I'm just mad.
For me, it is a great example specifically of what happens in the Black community. In St. Louis, which has never had a female mayor, the top two candidates were Lyda Crewson, a 64-year-old white woman, with endorsements from the problematic, the very problematic St. Louis Police Department.
From Lucifer Morningstar.
And Tashara Jones, who's a 44-year-old Black incumbent city treasurer, active with Black Lives Matter since the Ferguson, Missouri uprising. Jones lost to Crewson by 888 votes. It was 30.4% to 32%. Now, there are a lot of numbers that I could throw at you that I'm not going to bog you down with. But basically, there were four candidates who were Black. Jones was the only woman, and there were three Black men. And if only just one of those Black men would have said, you know what? Let me rally behind this woman. She would have won. The other main Black candidates were Alderman Jeffrey Boyd, who received 2.7% of the vote. Alderman Antonio French, 15.8%, who shot to national stardom, it said, because of his Twitter following during the Ferguson activism in 2014. And then Lewis Reed, who's president of the board of aldermen, 18.3%. He had already lost the mayor's race in 2014 by almost 10%. Let that sink in for a moment. Further, there are 196,150 registered voters in St. Louis, but only 55,635 turned out. Between 2013 and 2017, there's been a 6% increase in voting in mayoral primary voters. But obviously, those numbers speak for themselves. And this is symptomatic, in my opinion, of a larger problem in the Black community, and especially in navigating race and gender. This is why there's not a unified platform. This is why the example that Kimberly Crenshaw gives of what led her to recognizing intersectionality way back in the day is when she stood at the front door with a Black male colleague and peer, and they were invited into this white thing, and they had talked before getting there. And they said, okay, you know, we're going to be in unison. We're going to be unified. We're going to have one voice. We're not going to, we're going to have each other's back. They get to the front door. They've just arrived. And the man says to them, women can't come through the front door. I'm sorry. Bruh man looks at her and says, I'll see you on the inside.
Wow.
That is the story of the moment she realized we will never be the same.
Mm-hmm.
They had a whole conversation about having each other's back. And in the first moments of challenge, it was clear how they have each other's back.
That's so sad, but it's like also so typical. I mean, it's like that male ego thing. Like none of those brothers thought they had a chance at winning, right? They didn't make second place. They didn't make third place. Like it's just, those brothers didn't think they had a chance at winning. So then you have to really wonder like, so why are you running right now?
Right.
Why what's happening? Running? What's happening right now? And look, I'm all for diversity of thought, but you also have to know when to say, you know what, I'm not the most qualified person to do this. And one great Medium article that I can't place right now, I was trying to search for it, said essentially, and I'm paraphrasing because I can't find the quote, that a longstanding technique is to use ill-qualified Black men and put them in roles where they just won't be able to fulfill the role properly and say, well, see, look, you have Black leadership. See, look, you have somebody there that's in power. Case in point, Ben Carson, who said even before he got the head role that he was not qualified, which was accurate. He did say that. He said that.
If you don't even realize that growing up with food stamps in Section 8 means that you did receive government benefits, then you're not qualified to be the secretary of HUD. That's just the case.
Oh my gosh.
So anyway.
So I feel, yeah, I mean, I feel really bad for her because she deserved that. And now everybody loses.
So let that just be a call to action for races coming up in Miami, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Atlanta, New York, and many more cities. Even though the Black mayor in Atlanta, he's done some really great work, I will say. I am a fan. He has shown and proven himself to be very competent and very woke.
Mm-hmm. I was very surprised and disappointed by Antonio French. I had been following him myself, and I just...
Okay, left. So what we need to do is, this is the call to action.
Mm-hmm.
Stop each other down and shutting each other out and find a way to rally around the cause at hand.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to end with a quote from Jones, who said, I'm really disappointed that the ego, patriarchy, and sexism won the day yesterday when all the Black candidates met before filing closed. Only the Black women decided to work together and support each other. When will we come together for the common good? Even if all the men in the race got together and decided to go with one male candidate, we would have had a much different outcome.
In our third segment, what are we excited about? What are we looking forward to? Let's hear it.
I'm excited about seeing you, boo-boo.
Mm.
Boom, 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 bam. What you want from the Adams? You gonna bring you? Yo, you can see some chocolate. You want some pastries? What you want? I'ma come. Yeah. So
we're not gonna be spending a lot of time together, actually.
Wow. You're
come and go as you please. Damn. I'm not cooking for you because you turned your nose up the last time I did. So
I didn't turn my nose up.
The refrigerator will be stocked. You can make whatever you like.
Is raw food cooked? Because
anyway, this is why I won't be cooking for you. So you can make whatever you like.
Shady Scorpio.
No, not shady.
When you were visit shady. Them,
you were
just
shady.
Be ready to get the tail.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness! Damn. So I'm ready to come to London, like Pattinson Bear. I'm ready.
Pattinson Bear.
Yes.
You heard it here, folks.
Yes, I'm very excited. Very excited. Got some events. That's right. That's right. I get a little glimpse of life in London and all the amazing events I could be seeing if I lived there.
Yes, indeed.
Which I can't because, you know, Brexit. But I'm excited about it. What are you excited about, my love? Tell me.
I'm excited that next week I will be filling up on blackness. I
Do
will
it.
Be watching I Am Not Your Negro.
Ooh.
Unfortunately, I missed the window to buy a ticket because apparently there's going to be a Q&A with the director, which I didn't know about. Yeah. That's going to be on Monday. I'm going to see if I can cop a ticket somehow, but I did miss that window. That's sold out. Of course it is. But I will be watching it on Wednesday either way before you arrive. Such a shame. Then there is a program happening for women in science fiction that we will both be attending. I'm quite excited about that. We'll be talking about Octavia Butler and many, many others. Mm-hmm. And there is an event happening on Stuart Hall, who was a great leader here, a figure originally from Jamaica who came to England to study, and he stayed, and he is just amazing. He passed away a few years ago, but his legacy lives on. All of the work that he did bringing cultural studies and politics together and showing how culture influences politics. So I'm just going to be like helping my mind bloom.
It's a lot of blackness.
And like understanding life and politics and culture and with a lot of politically black folk.
By the time I get there, you would have evolved to kind of like a Sada Shakur type being. And do you understand what I mean? Like, it's just going to be like, you're going to have a free breakfast program. I don't even know what's going to happen when I get there. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be great.
Well, that's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. And hit up our Patreon site, patreon.com/TheQueerTruth, and help us out with a small donation. Until next time, peace out.